WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Lots of comics hope to get their own sitcom and, like Jerry Seinfeld, emerge rich and famous. When comic Margaret Cho got her own sitcom, it was a nightmare. Her ABC series, All-American Girl, which aired in the 1994-95 season, was the first network sitcom about an Asian-American family. Her sitcom experience and its aftermath became fodder for her one-woman show, I'm the One That I Want. A film version of that show has just been released. It's already opened in San Francisco and Seattle and will open in other cities over the next few weeks. In the show, Cho describes how she was advised by people at the network to lose weight before shooting the series and how she followed through with an extreme diet that landed her in the hospital. Here's Cho on stage talking about publicizing her sitcom at a press conference where she and her producers were questioned by reporters.
I stood in front of 101 television critics for a big critics convention, and Gail was on one side, Gary was on the other side. And a producer, the critic asked me, he said, "Miss Cho, isn't it true that the network asked you to lose weight to play the part of yourself on your own TV show?" And Gail grabbed the mic for me and said, "There is no truth in that whatsoever." I was losing it. I was starving myself to death, and yet I would read in tabloids, "Margaret Cho has thunder thighs," or "the chow-like Cho diet." They printed this fake diet that I never went on with fake quotes from me like, "When I was young, I was raised on rice and fish." Asian way of eating. You can almost hear the mandolin in the background. "When I was a little girl, I grew up on the rice paddy. And we don't have any food. But even though we have no food, I have a tendency to put on weight."
Margaret Cho, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
I want to hear more about how you were forced to go on this diet when you had your TV show. How and why did they approach you on this?
Well, it was very sort of sensitively handled. The producer of the show called me up and tried to break it to me as delicately as possible. I think she was chosen to do the job because she was my friend, and I probably would have accepted things from her that I may not have accepted from a man, but I don't know. And I wasn't exactly forced into it. It was just put to me, suggested as delicately as possible, which I think it's just the same as forcing somebody to do it, especially because women are so held up to this ridiculous ideal that we should be thin and kind of perfect looking. And I fell very much into that trap. And I was very young and very impressionable. And I think it's so taboo in our society to ask somebody to lose weight. But when somebody actually asks you, then I think that you really do feel forced, even though it wasn't really, you know, against my will. I did it, but it certainly was very terrifying, and I lost an incredible amount of weight because it was so terrifying. I'm sure that fear was definitely a factor in there, and I talk about it a little in the show that it was diet and exercise and sheer terror.
So
the weight came off.
When they asked you to lose weight, the show hadn't started yet, right?
The show hadn't started yet. We actually hadn't even shot the pilot. That it was in order to shoot the pilot where I was asked. And it was interesting because it had never been discussed at all before in the development process, in any of the negotiations, in any of the script meetings, in anything. It had never been brought up. And even before that, my weight had never been an issue in my work. I had never had a problem with it, and I didn't know how to deal with it. If I had had the presence of mind to say no, if I had had some self-confidence, if I had had a little bit more love and care for myself, I would have refused. I did not have that at that time.
But it's awkward, you know. Here, these are the professionals. These are the people in the business who know television. And
yes.
They're supposed to be giving you advice, and they're telling you, hey, you're too chubby. So, you know, you're in the position where you're supposed to be deferring to their wisdom.
Exactly. And I thought that this was Hollywood. This is how it goes. And
it is how it goes.
And it is how it goes. You know, and I'm not an unusual case. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens every day. But I was not... I was not hired for that.
Didn't you feel like, hey, didn't you guys notice this before?
Well, it had never been brought up. It had never, ever been brought up. I think that suddenly they saw that I could be more than just a comedian. Instead, I could be an ingenue. It would be better for me to be an ingenue. And that's I guess, what they had decided somewhere through it all when I had been hired for my comedic talent, not for my looks. Although I... was always insecure about my looks anyway. So I believed it, and I didn't question them.
So you lost 30 pounds in 1 week, I believe, and then ended up in the hospital?
In 2 weeks, and I was hospitalized. And, you know, it's really sad. It's really sick that I did that to myself. And yet I don't blame anybody. It just happened. And it certainly makes for good comedy later. All my
yes, it does.
Adventures.
I'll vouch for that.
I think it's okay now.
So what did you do to lose weight that quickly?
I went into this ridiculous diet and exercise regime that was far too intense for me, which is why I was eventually hospitalized. And you know, after that, I kind of couldn't really work out too much, so I started taking diet pills, which made my health and my sanity just was worse. And it was really difficult to cope with all the pressures on the set. And taking the pills set a dangerous precedent later, you know, for this drug use that would not cease for many years after.
Oh, so do you think the diet pills led you into...
I think the diet pills... I mean, I had always had been predisposed to that kind of lifestyle, but that really... that was a dangerous introduction and into something else, something higher.
So let's talk a little bit about the show. You had the network sitcom, All American Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like the show? It was built around you.
It was built around me.
Yeah.
But I did not like the show. I had no... real creative control over it. I really let it get away from me, and it was very difficult. It was a difficult process for me because I was so incredibly insecure, and already my attention had been diverted into this idea of, oh, I have to lose weight and put all of my energies into that. And so I had very little left over to be funny. I just really had a hard time fitting into the family hour of television. My act was always way too blue, way too raw and edgy for that audience. And yet here I was presented for that audience. And you know, there was kids on the show, and I didn't understand that. And it really was, my image was taken and distorted and you know, completely got so far away from who I was. And I talk about it in the show where I was so unrecognizable to myself, and all I know is that I had failed, but I had failed as somebody else, which was an incredibly painful experience.
The premise of the show was, you know, you played a Korean-American young woman named Margaret Kim,
mm-hmm.
and the show focused on generational conflicts between you and your parents.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the real truth of it is that it was perceived as a cultural conflict, you know, like, oh, you know, I think that people saw my comedy, these network executives saw my comedy and said, oh, well, it's about the struggle between East and West. And actually, the real struggle is what I'm saying in my stand-up is my parents are a pain in my ass, and they're not really, it's not cultural. They're just a pain in the ass. And that's what I think that was misunderstood somehow.
Maybe you could choose an episode from the show that was actually based on something that happened in your life and compare how it happened in your life with how it was written for the show.
Well, there is something that I do in my stand-up act where my parents own a bookstore, and it was in San Francisco, and it was in the 70s, and it was in a gay area. And my mother had the very interesting job of stalking the gay porn section. And so I talk about it in my act. It's a routine that I do, and it's just it was taken from my stand-up and then put into the television show. Like my parents had a video store, and I was threatening my mother that I was going to wear an outfit that one of the porn actresses was wearing. So that's sort of how it was interpreted for the show. Is that it wasn't. What I was talking about was the juxtaposition of this older Korean woman kind of dealing with the idea of gay pornography, and it was that there was humor there for my audience, and then it was taken and kind of distorted into this idea that my mother was disapproving of me because I was rebelling and threatening to be like a porn actress. So I guess that's not the best, but that's the closest example that I could think of how it was all misinterpreted.
My guest is comic and actress Margaret Cho. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1999 interview with comic and actress Margaret Cho. You do very funny impersonations of your mother in your performances. When did your parents come to the United States from Korea?
1964.
Now, you said your parents owned a bookstore.
Yes, in San Francisco called Paperback Traffic in the 70s and the 80s.
What kind of books did they sell in addition to the gay pornography?
Well, it was really a very eclectic bookstore. They sold a lot of books on art. It catered to this, it catered to the gay community more or less, you know, and they had a lot of books on art and photography and film and an extensive section on and metaphysical studies and social studies. And it was one of those, you know, just It was a really great family bookstore, and there were a lot of employees that were gay and lesbian, and my father really kind of thrust me into the care of them, and saying that, you know, they would be able to educate me in a way that he couldn't, and that I should be exposed to their culture because they will teach me about art and they will teach me about the things in the world that I need to know about. And even though he was incredibly conservative in many ways, that was the greatest way to grow up with a wonderful group of gay nannies. And it's odd. They were a very interesting bunch of guys and girls, and it was a great way to, like, be a kid.
Now, in addition to running the bookstore, I know your father also wrote joke books?
He wrote one joke book, and which was a kind of a reference book for speakers to, you know, like Toastmasters quotations or jokes for speech making, or I don't really know. I can't read it. It's in Korean, so I don't read Korean.
So is he a bit of a jokester himself?
Well, I guess so. I think he's more of a scholar, but he's not really that... you know, he's not really cut up. I suppose it's more of a literary thing.
Did he take an interest in jokes when you were young?
No, but when I was young, I used to watch this show called Comedy Tonight with my father, and it was stand-up comedians, and, you know, there were a lot of people on that show, like Whoopi Goldberg and Bobcat Goldthwait, and all these different comedians, and it was a local show. It was, like, San Francisco, and it was just... all these different people, and my father and I would watch it Thursday night at 9 o'clock, and we would laugh, and he would laugh, and my father loved stand-up comedy,
And we would also watch Richard Pryor movies together. Even though I was so young, and I didn't really understand what was happening, you know, and all the sexual material and everything was lost on me, yet it was so delightful to see my father laughing. My father, this incredibly serious, incredibly dour, stoic man, laughing. And I thought, oh, well, this would be ultimately a way to please him if I go into stand-up comedy, which really wasn't the case. He was very angry at me for years for embarking on that career. But I think early on, I kind of thought, oh, stand-up comedy is something that my father likes, and, you know, maybe I can do that.
Why was he angry with you for becoming a comic?
Well, he just did not believe that it was possible for me to have a career. My parents, both of them, did not want me to do stand-up comedy. They didn't want me to go into acting. They didn't want me to go into anything that they did not just, they were not able to kind of see the outcome in. They just did not think it was possible. You know, they experienced such intense racism and hatred and difficulty just surviving as Americans in the 60s and 70s. And so they just could not believe that this country would accept their child in that way.
Can you give us a sense of what your act was like when you were a teenager and just getting started?
Well, it was pretty much the same thing. You know, I was just talking about my family and talking about my relationships and how hideous they all are. And that's all I've ever done, you know, just talking about my life.
What would you say about your mother then?
When I talk about her, I don't really judge her or say anything about her. I just say what she says.
Right.
You know, I'm just repeating what she says. And to me, the voice of my mother in my act really is the voice of my Asian-ness. The fact that I am very, a very modern person, I'm very independent, and yet there is a part of me that is ancient and as old as the culture, and I cannot let go of. I cannot let go of the color of my skin, and I cannot let go of these things that will always be there. And so I cannot let go of this voice that is always going to be there.
Could you do your mother's voice for us?
Oh, yes. Well, she, whenever I talk to her lately, she's very, "Mommy is so famous because you always do mommy, and mommy is so famous. I play golf and everybody know who mommy is." And it's true. They all know.
How does your mother feel about you doing her on stage?
Well, she loves it, yet my parents have never come to see me perform. I think that what I do terrifies them. I think that they cannot bear it in a way. That they are so proud and so excited for me and always watch me on television and always there showing their friends videotapes and playing my records and being there for me. But they cannot come see me because I think they just are so afraid. And I don't invite them because I'm terrified as well. I don't know if I'd be able to do it if they were there. Or I don't know.
What are they afraid of?
I'm not sure. I think that what I do also is so culturally... It's just this very outlaw thing, you know, to discuss your feelings and intimacies and failures and pain so openly and so loudly and to do so, all these things and get laughter and on top of it all, be a woman is so outrageous that I think that it's hard for them to really enjoy what I do, but they have to.
We talked a little bit about the show, the sitcom that you used to have, All American Girl, and the conflicts between your character in that show and her parents. Have you had a lot of kind of cultural conflicts with your parents over the years?
No. Well, you know, what was lucky for me was that I was expelled from high school when I was 15 years old. And so I disappointed my parents so young that they learned not to expect anything from me. And that gave me the freedom to really have the best life, because I know so many people that are my age and my generation who are Koreans and are just paralyzed by parental control. They cannot break free from the expectations and the needs and desires and wants of their parents to go into certain careers that, you know, they wouldn't necessarily pursue, but only do so to keep their parents happy. And because I was so assured not to get parental approval so young, that I had this incredibly free ride. Like, I could just go and pick and choose whatever I wanted to do, because I didn't have to worry about what they were thinking and what they were going to be concerned with.
One last question about your parents. As you explained, they ran a bookstore, and there was a gay porn section in the bookstore. You use a lot of sexual language and sexual description in your show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you think your parents would be shocked or offended by the language that you use.
Well, you know what they do is, whenever they see it, they do see it eventually, you know, after a while, like on video or on a record or something. And then that's when they use their selective understanding of English. I don't know what this means, but everybody thinks that's so funny. So that's what my mother would say. Why is that funny? That's not that funny. She doesn't know what it means, but she does, which is ultimately the greatest joke of all.
Well, Margaret Cho, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Margaret Cho recorded last year. There's a new film version of her one-woman show, I'm the One That I Want. Tomorrow, she'll be the Grand Marshal of the Gay Pride Parade in San Diego. Coming up, a review of the new film, What Lies Beneath. This is Fresh Air.